Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Sunday, November 2nd, 2025, 2 days before local elections across the state of Minnesota. And a little breaking news this morning, Lisa DeMuth, the Speaker of the House, a Republican, will release a video later today and hold a news conference tomorrow announcing she will run for governor in 2026. You can read more about it at thedailyagenda.com. I think we're working on getting a story up at WCCORadio.com. Send your text, your thoughts, 651-461-9226 about that news, the governor's race, Tuesday's election. We're live, local, and ready to talk politics after an extra hour's sleep, a little coffee. Ryan has saved the text line for me so I can read it in real time. We're off to a good start, Ryan.
It sounds like it, boys. You got some breaking news. You're here in person. I mean, what could be better on a Sunday morning in CCO land?
Well, that's what I think. It feels good to be live. Thanks for those who put up with my recorded versions. But this week starts the new election year through 2026. So we'll have plenty of live shows over the next year. We'll have debates, we'll have commentary, we'll have guests and interviews, and here we go. But Election Day Tuesday, what we'll cover in the second segment here is what we're watching. And I want to know what you're watching on Tuesday as well. 651-461-9226. Feel free to call or text or go to the Odyssey app and leave us a voice note and let us know what you're thinking. These midterm elections are always a little bit of a crystal ball. And the volatility of the environment right now in politics, government, at a national level, the polarization within the parties, the infighting within Democratic Party nationally between Democratic Socialists, is beginning to shape up and show how the narrative, how the dynamics of 2026 are going to be. On the two coasts, you have Democratic parties in California, Prop 50, trying to gerrymander new seats. This, of course, is after Texas tried to gerrymander new seats. And then in Maine, a Senate race where a different challenge to a longtime Democratic stalwart is to release her health records, and she's refusing. And the pressure is coming from younger voters. That's what we're seeing in the New York City mayor's race, this surge of youthful exuberism of a Democratic socialist bent. And we're seeing it right here in Minneapolis as well. How's it going to play out? 651-461-9226. Here's what we're going to talk about. We'll talk about school board races at the bottom of the hour. I'll have a take on the way modern campaigns want to operate versus the way journalism, news, and analysis should still battle to make them operate. And then in the next block, we will talk about what I'm watching nationally, locally, as signs of where the parties are at, where the state is at, where the city is at, and what it means to Democrats and Republicans going into 2026. So tell me what you think. 651-461-9226. I'm Blois Olson. This is Sunday Take. When we come back, what to watch for Tuesday and what it foretells for 2026. We'll be right back. Ryan's got a little peppy music going on this Sunday. Hope you're enjoying a nice cup of coffee, the Sunday paper, and listening to the Sunday Take. It's going to be a pretty good day today, 55. I think it's put away the patio furniture day, which is a melancholy thought. Might leave one chair, a couple chairs just for a fire. Should have some good fire nights coming up. But this is that time of year where Minnesotans start to pack it in, as they say. Golf course is closing. Leaves are falling. Get out and enjoy it today. Might be the last Sunday that you can get out and enjoy it. And let's just say those Vikings play at noon. And I've had this rule that I've mentioned many times. You know what you can get done on a productive Sunday without watching the Vikings? A lot. That'll be my plan today. It'll be on in my ear, or maybe on the screen, but we're going to have a productive Sunday at the residence of Olson. Your texts are coming in, 651-461-9226. As we look ahead to Tuesday, you can always follow the updates at thedailyagenda.com. Of course, I'm with Vanita every Monday through Thursday at 620. But here's a key question about New York, Minneapolis, and this rise of socialism. Are the youths going to show up to the polls, or is this exuberance limited to keyboard warrioring? Well, that's why we have the election, and that's why I'm asking the question. You know, I've talked to several people, including a Democrat this week who said his child, college age, was all in on Fateh in Minneapolis, and that didn't necessarily impact or, you know, reflect the values of the elected official. And I said, break that down a little. And young voters, especially urban young voters, feel as though candidates of color don't get their chances. Now, I think Senator Fateh's campaign has been well covered. It should be noted that he's declined, canceled, and refused to debate or be interviewed on the Sunday Take. And that is a strategy of the new socialist left. They avoid tough questions. Now, he did sit down with Vanita earlier last week. He did do debates. We did a debate with the Chamber, the Citizens League, and the Downtown Council. So we didn't totally ignore it. But that deep dive interview where you can really dig into policy concepts is there, such as the vacancy tax on commercial properties. That's something that is worth three or four or five questions rather than just one question. And that's what the youth do resort to the keyboard for. I will say the tenseness and barbs being thrown on the keyboard the last few days in the Minneapolis mayoral race between allies of Omar Fateh like Ilhan Omar and allies of Jacob Fry like his campaign team are colorful. They're delightful. They would make "These Are the Days of Our Lives" or "As the World Turns" blush as some sort of soap opera theme. But 90% of Minneapolis voters aren't watching X over the weekend. They're not even watching necessarily broadcast TV. They might be streaming something. They might be watching live sports. They might be enjoying the parks or they're outdoors. So what do we watch on Tuesday? In Minneapolis, as I wrote Friday, a lot is at stake. A lot is at stake for Governor Tim Walz and the state DFL. So imagine one scenario where Omar Fateh wins. His DFL endorsement had been revoked. The Democratic Socialists have a stronghold on Minneapolis politics with their legislative delegation. And the tension between Omar Fateh and the state party rises to an even new level, going into a statewide race where there's an open seat for the U.S. Senate and a governor's race. That would foretell a lot of tension for the DFL next year. Scenario two. Would that mean a more progressive or Democratic socialist candidate may challenge Governor Walz for governor? I think there's an outside chance that happens. That causes Governor Walz some headaches on his way to a primary or an endorsement fight in a third term that's going to be a challenge anyways. Nationally, I'm watching New York City. If Mondami pulls it off, does he really, really lean into real socialism? And what does that mean for the capitalist capital of the world? In Virginia and New Jersey, those governor's races and attorney general's races, what may end up happening is the candidate quality mattered more than party. Usually midterms are tough for a president. If President Trump's party, the Republicans, win a couple races, that's going to foretell that the midterm won't be as tough next year. It's just the data we get. It's the insight we get. We'll be watching two state Senate races here, the open seat where Nicole Mitchell resigned after being convicted of burglary in Woodbury. How close will that race be? Bruce Anderson, who unexpectedly died out in the Buffalo area, Delano area. What will happen there? Will it be closer than before? Those two seats aren't expected to change parties, but is there any data, any insight we can take from them? And then there's these school board races. In Anoka-Hennepin, you have union-funded, Democratic-aligned candidates very openly running against conservative-funded candidates. Anoka-Hennepin is our largest school district. It's in the exurbs and the suburbs. It has had some tense political battles over the years. So what does that mean if one side wins those school board races? We'll talk about that with Kirsten Schutte at the bottom of the hour from the School Board Integrity Project. We invited the Minnesota Parents Alliance on. They didn't have anybody with us, but school board races, even in my own community, have become partisan for nonpartisan offices. And there's this emerging provisional DFL endorsement for next year with candidates. Democrats are really trying to run the table on these local elections. They know that that's where future candidates come from. They know that's where policy is driven. What do you think about that? Should school board races be partisan? 651-461-9226. And then these school bond referendums. Economic times are tight. We are in a K-shaped economy. The well-to-do are doing well. The working class is not. Prices continue to rise. We have a federal government shutdown. SNAP benefits have been suspended. It's beginning to seem as though we're going to test all levels of governing and government service, from food support to airlines. And I just don't know how far the American populace is, how far they can bend before they break. And that brings me back to these school referendums. Property taxes are going up across the state, in cities and in school boards. And so do people feel that squeezed that they're not going to support their local schools? Do they think their schools are spending money efficiently? On Friday, Minneapolis teachers filed their authorization to strike, their intent to strike. We could have another Minneapolis teacher strike. Meanwhile, the district is on the verge of bankruptcy and insolvency. These are the things to watch Tuesday. Your text coming in. Polls open at 7 a.m., close at 8 p.m. on Tuesday. Thanks for asking the question. I was a Democrat, a Humphrey Democrat. I switched to the Republican Party. It's going too far left for me, so I will vote Republican. Mark, thanks for your text. I have asked the same question of Amy Klobuchar and Governor Walz with no answer as to fraud checks. Fraud is going to be an issue. We'll talk about it more, obviously, over the next year. One texter texts in, Lisa Daymuth and her presumed running mate, Ryan Wilson, will bring strong leadership and accountability back to Minnesota as speaker. She's been in the back room with Walz and knows exactly how he does and does not operate. Grateful for this run. Daymuth's announcement will definitely create some buzz. But Kristen Robbins has a good head start. Kendall Qualls has a good head start. Scott Jensen has an inherent level of support. There's other candidates like Phil Parrish, Brad Kohler, Jeff Johnson, not the same Jeff Johnson that's run for governor before. But Republicans had a lot of candidates last time, and they picked Jensen, and Jensen lost. And frankly, didn't run a great campaign. Now, the headwinds of the Roe decision at the Supreme Court and some other things played in, but Republicans sense this opportunity. And I'll leave you with this before we take the next break. If Democrats swing left towards Fate in Minneapolis, Republicans' opportunity next year will be stronger. When we come back, we'll dig down on these school board races. What's really at stake? And then the take this week. Do you get to script it, or does the news still matter? I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back. Hope you're enjoying a cup of coffee at Sunday Paper. Make the most of today. I know there's could be door knockers. There could be flyers. There is a rally for Senator Omar Fateh's mayor campaign later today. Like yesterday, Governor Walz held a rally for Jacob Frey. So there's politics in the air, so we're here to talk about it. And joining me now is Kirsten Schutte. She's the founder of the School Board Integrity Project, one of two groups that are looking and battling. There's no other word. The other one is the Minnesota Parents Alliance, and they were invited this morning, but didn't have anybody to come forward on local school board races. And this has been a trend for the last few years that these races are attracting external attention, external funding. Why does it matter? And should it be this way? Kirsten, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, boys. I'm excited to be here this morning.
I'm just going to start with one question. You call your organization the School Board Integrity Project. Is that to suggest that people who disagree with you don't have integrity?
It's not about people who disagree. Everybody has the right to disagree. That's not the question at the end of the day. The question at the end of the day is, are we electing folks to the school boards across the country and across our state of Minnesota who actually value public education and who want to see students succeed and want to have a safe and supportive and welcoming environment for every student to learn and thrive as their authentic selves? And the reality is that we started to really see in Minnesota in 2022 and 2023 that there were candidates who were running opposite of that, which is why we started the School Board Integrity Project, to make sure that we had candidates who ultimately were going to be pro public education on these school boards at the end of the day.
You say that people who are running opposite of being for public education. Minnesota has one of the deepest traditions of success and good results in public education. The test results statewide have not shown that Minnesota has held its excellence standard. Is that something that parents and teachers should work together on, or is that an outlier that we don't need to pay as much attention to right now?
You know, test scores are really important. And quite frankly, we all want every student to succeed and learn successfully. And that's something, believe it or not, that I think we all can agree on. But at the end of the day, there are also things that are more important than just looking at a simple test score. And so for us, it's about making sure that we're creating environments where everybody can learn and everybody can thrive. And so you know, I think that absolutely our parents and our educators should be working together to make sure that we have, you know, really successful students who are set up for the world in which they're going to inherit, right? And are going to be a part of when they graduate from school, which is the whole point of public education, to make sure that we have well-rounded students who are ready to take on the world that they're going into. And so, you know, at the end of the day, we absolutely need everybody working together. But like I mentioned before, there are candidates running who don't support our educators, who attack the teachers and who, you know, want to ban books and want to censor curriculum and not allow these trained professionals to do the work of teaching our students. And so that is really kind of where we come at the end of the day, where we need to have a discussion on who actually wants to be collaborative and work together to make sure that we're providing students a successful path. Or are we just sitting here to pound bully pulpits and create chaos? Because if that's the solution, then we have a different conversation that we need to have, and that's not serving any student.
One of the things that I, you know, as a parent with children who went through public schools and had one child in a private school for high school, one child in a public school for high school during the COVID years, and as a product of public schools myself, I can sense, and I can tell you, and I can tell the school board candidate that showed up at my door a few weeks ago, who got more than he bargained for, that there's a lot of parents who support public teachers who think that we've created a lot of non-core distractions in schools. Mm-hmm. Reading, writing, and math. And then that's less than half the day because of some other teachings that are required. There are teachers who bring strong political opinions into the classroom that maybe are counter to what parents think time should be spent on. How do you talk to those parents who may be totally supportive of public schools, but are very frustrated with the loudest voices winning the curriculum battle in the schools?
Yeah, that's actually really funny that you said the loudest voices are winning the curriculum battles, because the reality is that the majority of Minnesotans support public schools and support not censoring curriculum or banning books. We are the majority in that, and actually Minnesota rejects book bans stronger than any other state in the country. So although there's a lot of, you know, different conversations that need to be had, at the end of the day, our schools are responsible for adhering to state curriculum. And the state curriculum is set with a huge process. And there's a 37-step process before curriculum even ends up in any of our schools or towards the school board to be able to make a vote. So what I would say to folks who are concerned about that is to participate in any of those processes. You have the opportunity to be on a curriculum committee or, you know, a book review committee in your school district, just as a parent or as a concerned community member. So if those are things that you're concerned about, there are ways to have those conversations and be a productive member of those conversations. But if you're just, you know, creating chaos or causing an issue at the end of the day, then we have a problem, right? Like, if you're going to come forward and if you have concerns, that's fine. But we need to be able to have a productive conversation about what the solution actually is. And what we've seen on the ground in these conversations and with candidates running for school board is that they don't have a solution. They want to talk about how we need to take politics out of school or be neutral. But at the end of the day, that actually isn't a reality that we're looking at. And being neutral is harmful. Day is making a problem.
I'm going to push back.
Sure.
Being neutral is harmful for a teacher in social studies class?
Yes.
Kirsten, how can you say being neutral in teaching civics is harmful?
I didn't say that teaching civics is harmful. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that when you have leaders on a school board who are neutral, we have an issue because, for instance, look at Anoka Hennepin. I was actually one of the student plaintiffs against the neutrality policy in Anoka Hennepin in 2010 when we lost 9 students to suicide over the course of a year in the name of neutrality. because in that situation, it made it so that teachers and educators could not intervene in anti-gay bullying, and it created a situation where it was harmful for LGBTQ students. And that is the reality, whether we want to admit it or not. And so it's not about being neutral when we're teaching civics. And to be fair, the vast, vast majority of our educators are neutral in these conversations. But the reality is that when we don't talk about the real facts of history, and we want to teach both sides of things like slavery or deny the Holocaust, those are not neutral conversations either. And so the reality is that we need to adhere to state standards, and we need to make sure that everybody is learning the facts at the end of the day, which is what the vast majority of educators are looking for at the end of the day.
Just so you know, when you said that before, you said neutrality in the classroom. Just so you know, you said that neutrality in the classroom is bad. And that's where I think parents are really frustrated, okay? I think that the idea that you send your children to school to learn how to read, and maybe, look, I'm the biggest First Amendment proponent that you will ever find, okay? I am all against book bans. But at school, the chosen curriculum should be agreed to by the wide variety of the population of the district at a local level. You said state curriculum standards have this 37-step process. This is where the tension between local control, local values, local culture, and statewide mandates really starts to create this tension that I think parents look at and say, I just want my kid to be able to read, write, and do math and go to a safe school. I don't care about that other stuff.
For sure. And what I will say is that that is also in the state standards. There are standards in the test scores that you were talking about earlier, right? All of that is definitely still at the core of the conversation at the end of the day. But the reality is also that there is more to public education than just reading and math scores, right?
I agree.
And the local control conversation that you're having, I'm really glad that you brought that up, Blaise, because, you know, the reality, for instance, this cycle in Anoka-Hennepin, is that there's been almost $250,000 dumped in to buy 3 school board seats in Anoka-Hennepin this year by organizations like the 1776 Project PAC, which is out of Virginia. So I'm really interested to know how that constitutes local control and why are they involved in the conversation at the end of the day, right? And so I think that we have to have a bigger conversation about what democracy looks like on the school board level, because you're right. This is a very hot topic, and it continues to grow hotter post-COVID, post-2016. And we need to be having a conversation about what our local schools need, and also making sure that people understand the stakes of these school board elections, even if they don't have students in the district, because this public school conversation impacts every single one of us. But only 10% of the eligible electorate is actively voting in their school board elections. So these decisions aren't even being made by the majority in our local communities.
That's up to school boards to change their election dates. And with all due respect, you can.
That's also a state mandate.
Well, no, it's actually not. It's actually not.
Make the decisions on when they are. Yeah.
No, it's actually not. Local elections are controlled by the local body, so they could say, like in Edina, they put their school board and their mayor in even numbered years. That's possible.
For sure.
So that's up to school boards to change their election date. I will just say,
and we can also push back on that on the local or on the state level to mandate that they happen on an even year when more people are turning out. So two things can be true.
Exactly. Here's the other thing. You can criticize the 1776 group. I don't know who they are. They might be in Virginia, but let's call us
Virginia. That's a fact.
Call a spade a spade. You're in Minnesota and you do national work. So the nationalization of the school debate is, I think, one of the things that my listeners and my readers are like, oh, we've even gone to nationalization of our school boards. And that's where I think the local voices do get drowned out. And by the way, for years and years and years, other groups like Education Minnesota, and as a family member of plenty of public school teachers who supports Education Minnesota in certain ways for 53 years of my life, have also been the main funder of school board races until these other groups came in. So you can't deny that all this external money hasn't heightened it. And my last point of disclosure, just because I'm a big disclosure person, and we can talk about it offline someday, is, and you may recall, I'm very familiar with 2010 and Anoka Hennepin, and that was the beginning of the politicization of Anoka Hennepin schools that we live here 15 years later. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think all of that is fair. And what I will say is that there's definitely a difference between spending from our local educators, the people who are impacted every single day in their classrooms by the decisions being made on our school boards, and the people who are actually in our classrooms every day, and the folks who are from 1776 PAC or Parents Alliance organizations that change their name every cycle because their positions simply aren't popular and they lose on the elections. There's a difference between those two things. And I think that if we're going to talk about transparency, it's important that we talk about that. And yeah, we are a national organization, but we've worked with more than 650 candidates because they sign a school board integrity project candidate pledge, which isn't us putting money into specific races or having conversations. We actually only work here in Minnesota in that level. And the difference between the spending is absolutely astronomical. We've spent less than $5,000 in the Anoka Hennepin school board race. And that has gone into paid canvassers on the ground, talking to people about the importance of their election.
But you're not the only outside money. You're not the only outside money.
No, exactly. And I'm not saying that I am the only outside money. But what I am saying is that there is a difference in the conversation at the end of the day. And when we're talking about $5,000 versus $250,000, nobody should want this amount of money in their school board elections, period.
Fair point.
I don't want this amount of money in our school board elections. Like you said, I believe wholeheartedly that our school board candidates should be transparent, which is why I built out that pledge, so that they can clearly communicate their values in low turnout, low information elections.
All right.
And so that's what we're looking for at the end of the day.
Kirsten, as always, thanks for coming on. And we'll talk down
thank
the line.
Thank you so much.
Talk to you then.
All right. Talk to you soon.
You're listening to Sunday Take. I'm Blois Olson. Your thoughts, 651-461-9226. They're flowing in. When we come back, this week's take. Do you get to script your election these days? Or should news, journalism, and analysis still matter? Send me your early thoughts, 651-461-9226. Blois on the Sunday Take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm Blois Olson. Ryan, confession, this is the first time I've heard my new voiceover bumpers in person.
What do you think of it with the big voice guy?
It's a little soothing. It's a little more soothing, a little less, like, you know, excitable.
Yeah, he means business, this guy.
Brad Lane and I have been talking about, you know, after 5 years, we might want to change up the tone of the show going into an election year. And I think I can get to, like, soothing Sunday morning. I mean, it was Maroon 5 before, which was good. So we're just going to – it feels a little more slow jazzy. So we're going to have to slow it down just a little, which is probably good for conversations over the next year, is that we pace ourselves. We take our mental health days. We're aware of all the triggers, from social media to real media to talk radio. Your texts are flowing in about our last conversation about school board races. When my children were in high school, I know the amount spent per student in private school was lower than that of public schools, but test scores were higher. But again, that was 2004. Yeah, like, you know, look, you can slice, dice, cut these test scores, spending, elections, any way you want. I just know that there is a level of tension between test scores, content in the classroom, voices of teachers that are there. I also have no doubt that most teachers are doing their job without a political agenda. The challenge is they don't speak up and take issue with their colleagues who do teach with a political agenda, which is the dynamic of, frankly, most institutions these days, and the loudest voices, which I've talked about before. More text here. Please study the 1776 Project to understand what's going on with school board elections. Love your show and how you aren't afraid to confront. Highlight that one for the bosses. end of the year race coming in, I'm sure. Focus of cultural ends up being LGBT and race identity, where the culture focus is not whether these groups accommodated. Big problem is teachers unions. Look, I don't actually think the teachers are the issue, but I do think sometimes union leadership statewide is out of connection with local. I also think that teachers who speak up locally are shamed and pushed down if they don't agree with the direction of the union, and that's a phenomenon that's gone on for years. Education is going to be a big topic in next year's governor's race. If you missed it at the top of the hour, Lisa Daymuth, the Speaker of the House, a Republican, will announce later today she's running for governor. She'll have a news conference tomorrow. We'll have all the coverage here on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, including, I'm sure I'll talk to Vanita about it at 6:20 tomorrow. If you want to read more about that, just go to thedailyagenda.com right now. Sign up for our regular updates, but you can read my analysis, early analysis of that race there. So now it's time for this week's take. We are in an era of scripted candidates. Candidates have long been scripted, but now the expectation from their operatives, whether it's Governor Walz or Lisa Daymuth, is that they get to plan out the perfect launch or the perfect press event, and it's ultimately the news clip that matters. As a media guy, I can appreciate that. And in fact, many days I'm trying to script out something for a client to either make it land smoothly or get as much attention as possible. But that doesn't take away from the job of a journalist, an analyst, a reporter, a news outlet to report news when it's news. That's what I pledge to you in 2026. That's what we've done here for, I don't know, 27 plus years this week, is that when we have news, we share it. Then we can react. Of course, we cut deals on embargoes. We wait to release news. But if you haven't shared the news with us under that embargo, we're under no contract or covenant to withhold the news from our listeners and our readers. And so with that, I will tell you that let's have less scripted politics in 2026 and starting this week. In 1998, Jesse Ventura was the least scripted result that we could deal with, and that's when I launched into my role on this station, and may next year be the same. That's this week's take. I'll be with Vanita 6:20 Monday through Thursday. I'll be back here next week with some version, some analysis, some hopefully breaking news again. You can always read what we have at thedailyagenda.com. You can follow me on the X at Blois Olson. Corzo's up next. The Vikings play at noon. That's the take.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.